Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Really hope you enjoy part two of Walking the Dog with the wonderful Rhys James. Do remember to listen to part one if you haven't already, and we'd love it if you subscribe to Walking the Dog. Here's Rhys and Ray Ray.
You'd sort of realised whilst you were doing your degree that you weren't going to have a career in international relations.
I still back myself.
You weren't going to be Boutros Boutros.
I would love to be.
You were going to be.
I still think I could. I'll tell you what I do think, and I think this of most comedians. I think any comedian could walk into a job in advertising and do better than most people.
Well, I certainly think, I do
a creative
believe
job in advertising.
That comedians who've done enough stage time, and that's a crucial thing I would say here, because hate to break it to you young people, you do need the stage time,
yeah.
But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
No, but I do think that most comedians, I think what they have is an extraordinary fearlessness that is necessary to do that job. So what
I would say, I actually don't think it's fearlessness.
What do you think
fear.
It is?
There's loads of fear.
What is it?
Well, you just do it scared. You just have to be scared and still do it because you want to do it. It's just like you. It's just that you want to do it so much that you go, well, it doesn't matter. I'd be scared doing something else.
That's fearlessness.
Right. Sorry, I should have looked up the definition of fearlessness. Isn't fearlessness not just being completely like?
No, that's a sociopath.
I'm fine with this.
So, you're fearless, what I'm saying is it's feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is fearlessness in my book anyway.
Okay.
Because what holds most people back from pursuing their dreams or the things they really want to do is the terror of failure.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that feeling, the other feeling, which is being scared to sort of put yourself out there, fear of not even failure, just like how it'll be perceived, etc., weirdly does exist quite a lot within the world. So like, yes, you've conquered the fear of doing stand-up and going in front of an audience, but then there's little microcosm ones where you're like, but I'm not going to do TikToks, for example.
Why?
I'm not going to make original because it's a bit like, it's just really scary because you're like, oh, and then I'm what going, even though it's literally exactly the same, it would be like, I'm going to film myself going, I think this is really funny, and then I'm going to put it out there and go, wow, it's gross. Perfect time for a rubbish truck to start up, as I mentioned, the idea of original TikToks.
So, your career, did it take off as a result of, was it the Edinburgh Festival, or was it, did you get TV work relatively early, Rhys?
I'm still waiting for it to take off. The thing that happened first, well, I don't know. There's all sorts of different moments where you feel like, okay, now this is it, and then it isn't. You go, oh great, well that, and then that's going to open all these doors, and nothing opens any doors. So each of those is an individual lock to pick, basically. But you have moments. So like the first time I got on a panel show, it was probably, I think it was Sweat the Small Stuff, a short-lived, I want to say E4 or BBC Three. I think BBC Three panel show hosted by, I want to say Nick Grimshaw. First got on that, and then it went really well, and I was like, well, everyone in the industry will see that, because it's a panel show and I've done really well at it, so they'll book me for every other panel show. Obviously that doesn't happen. Not a single person ever references it, including any audience members, because no one watches anything. And then, like, you know, a few more little bits like that. Then there was a show called At 11ish on ITV2, which no one remembers, and rightly so, that was like a big cast of sort of the lots of comics in my generation doing a sort of sketch show. And within that, there was like a core cast that was like in the writer's room, that would be behind the scenes writer's room sketches. And that was me, Lolly Adefope, Natasha Dimitriou, Bobby Mehr and Dane Baptiste were the core people. And then outside that you had all sorts of people were on the show who did like sketches every week, and it would just be like a rotating cast. That did one series, classic. It got like a really good write-up in The Guardian and everyone was like, oh my God, we're gonna get a second series. But it sort of never really did well. We spent most of those weeks having our first experience of like real online abuse. when people with, it was like the original people with dog avatars, like bulldog avatars. I looked at Raymond as I said that and I thought, it wasn't you, actually.
Hello.
Is a Tibetan?
Oh, no, he's an Imperial Shih Tzu.
Small.
Yes. All three of us are.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is like being
you
at school.
Yeah. I like that.
Pointing and saying the word small. Oh, my God, it's all rushing back.
We should have cried and said, I feel really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So go on, what were you saying?
Yeah, that was when it was like bulldog avatars saying, where's Family Guy? Family Guy, we'd taken Family Guy's slot. The Family Guy was on every day of the week at 10:30, and then one day a week we were on at 10:30, and people would go mad.
He said, let's get an ice cream.
Oh, lovely
stuff. Shall we?
Love, we're in ice cream season.
Come on.
Is that called Mario?
Reese, please, can we go to the ice cream van?
Yeah, you started sprinting.
Reese, there's a queue for the ice cream van, and there's a lot of school children, but the good thing is, because we're both slight individuals, small individuals, I think we form our own gang with Ray.
Yeah, big time. I think we'll intimidate some of these dweebs.
How long is the queue? It's about 30 deep. What do you want for an ice cream, Reese?
Got to go classic, haven't you?
I'll have 2 99s, please.
Yeah. Let's go small ones.
2 small 99.
Not for me, thanks.
Would you like sauce?
No, thank you.
No sauce for us, please.
Very sauceless individual.
We've got our ice creams, Reese. Quite nice. Oh, I love a 99, do you?
Is now a good time to tell you I'm lactose intolerant?
Are you?
No. But I kind of think everyone is a bit.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm getting at there?
Yeah.
I think everyone's a bit allergic to all of this stuff.
So, Reese, we've got our 99 flakes.
Yeah.
We're talking about your fabulous comedy career. And you were on Mock the Week for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, 6 years.
And did you love doing that?
I did. It's really stressful. There's elements of it. I love the experience, I love the fact I did it, the absolute honour of getting to do it, the even bigger honour of getting to be quite high up on the Wikipedia page if organised by episodes completed is one of the best. I'm top 10, if not 5, I think. Outside of captains, please don't email me saying, actually, you're about 25th. Outside of official regulars. That obviously is incredible. I'm very glad I did it. The moments on that show when you were landing something or getting a running joke going were an absolutely sensational feeling, and everyone was very nice. It made me very anxious all the time in the sort of prep for it, and there is some prep for it. But not even just like, it's not even the prep of, well, let's think of some jokes about this news story. There's prep of, fucking hell, I've got to go do that. There's a lot of that, which is like, oh my God, it's happening tomorrow. And it's like, it feels like such a big deal, and so it's scary, like we're talking about. So I kind of don't miss that feeling. What? And it's a feeling I haven't had massively with other things. Mm. I think because Mock the Week, it was like, it was quite an intense show to do because it goes on for ages, the recording. Mm. And you're all talking about the same thing. So you're like, there is an aspect of like, well, what's my angle that no one's going to be able to say before me? So what am I bringing to the table? And I think eventually I got somewhere with that. And I figured out an approach that no one else was doing, which was I would always try and solve the stories. So everyone talked about the stories and I would go, my first instinct when writing to try and be different was, went from, okay, why is Donald Trump doing this really? What's the secret joke we can do here that he's like, oh, he's only doing that because, and we look at it from that angle rather than he's a bastard and his hair is very silly. Mm. Not to belittle topical comedy, but there was a lot of hair Donald Trump stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure I did some myself. And then it went to, okay, well, this is a problem in the country. Oh, there's a recession. Well, why don't I just come up with a bunch of solutions to a recession instead, and then I can just do any joke. And you don't have to speak specifically about a piece of, or like Brexit and stuff. It would be like, what can we do that solves this issue rather than having to talk about a really specific bit of legislation Theresa May is trying to get through to do with fishing rights? Mm. I was like, I can't be asked to talk about that. So if I bird's eye view this, I can go, oh, here's how we solve the whole problem. or whatever, you know, stuff like that. And then you get some jokes out of that. That was really satisfying. I look back on it very glad that I was able to do that. That has led to a certain way of writing that I've used in lots of other things. But it definitely, in the days building up to doing Mock of the Week, I would work like so much harder than on anything else, hours-wise, and just like constant focus. Something I'm not able to do without that looming deadline. My focus was insane. I mean, it would just be like non-stop to the moment we would go on.
To the exclusion of all else, you were able to just focus on that.
Yeah.
My best friend Jane always says about writing, and I say, oh, I don't like it. I'm not like you. And she says, no one likes writing, Emma. Everyone likes having written.
Yeah.
100%. Is there an element with that sort of performing with panel shows, something like Mock the Week, which is quite, you know, competitive and there's a bear pit gladiatorial element to it. I'm not saying necessarily you and the other talent, I'm just saying the way the programme is structured. Was there an element of you thinking, feeling proud of yourself that you'd done it in a sense of great relief, but not a lot of, I suppose, feeling trepidatious going into it?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that point about writing. I feel like that a bit with reading.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like, oh, reading's so boring, but I love the fact I read just then. Mm. Which is mad, because reading also used to be, you know, reading now is like, oh my God, I'm not watching anything or looking at my phone, how cool am I? Whereas in the past it was like, reading a novel was like, oh, he's got his head in the clouds, he'll never focus and concentrate and all that. And yeah, when it was doing Mock the Week, there was definitely a bit of like, my sort of MO forever has been, up until the second I've walked onto the stage, if the venue sets on fire and we can't do the gig, that would be the dream scenario. And then I went to do Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, International New Faces, and that happened. And the venue set on fire 1 second before the gig was supposed to start, and then we couldn't do the show. And everyone afterwards was gutted, and people who I've known for years were saying to me, Rhys, I have never seen you so chipper in my life. I was like a ball of energy. I was so happy. Obviously, I'm not happy at the result. It would have been great to have done the gig and then have done it. But that feeling in that moment of just pure relief, of like, oh my God, this thing that I'm scared of and I am nervous about and having to pretend I'm not nervous about now isn't happening. So all of that can just disappear, and just a wave of joy of not having to do the scary thing. Overwhelming. Who are these guys?
The ducks.
Do you find it weird that Ray, the dog, is smaller than this potential duck? Because don't you think that doesn't make any sense? I can't get my head around that sort of stuff. How can you be smaller than a duck when you're a dog? And that's me saying that.
I didn't want to say that. Do you think sometimes we have a tendency to shame those that we feel we're in the same group as? Oh, is he doing his shit?
So you think I was projecting onto Ray there, do you?
A little bit.
How can you be smaller than a girl? You're a boy. That's effectively what just happened there.
Can you?
Is this what you do? You just bring people to the park and then psychoanalyze them so they realise all these things that they... Oh, my God.
Do you know what? This duck here, which panellist on Mock the Week does this remind you of?
Will you bleep it? Really? You have to bleep it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about your personal life. That's what I do. There is a Mrs.
Sorry, just to clarify, far, do you feel you haven't been asking about my personal life?
I have barely got started, mate.
Oh, my God.
Tell me
this
about...
This is the most I've revealed on anything ever.
Is it?
Quite possibly, yeah. Most people just, you know, they go for the basics. What's the worst heckle you've ever had? Oh, they go, can you say anything anymore? Has it all gone a bit woke? Do you know who said that to me? On Celeb Mastermind, John Humphreys said that to me.
What was your specialist subject, Rhys?
The Office, the US version of The Office. Pathetic.
What was John Humphreys
like? So basically, we recorded it in the pandemic. Things were just starting to lift a little bit, and they recorded it in Belfast, so they did when I did it. And so I got on this plane, and the only people really on this plane were the people going to do Celeb Mastermind, and it was just sort of like Stephen Kamos, Patrick Kielty, and Steve Backshaw. So because it was in this sort of pandemic break, we went to this hotel and there was kind of not really anyone there. And so they sort of opened the bar of this hotel because we were there.
Oh.
Which is the sort of peek behind the showbiz curtain. But yeah. It meant that I was like, I haven't seen anyone properly for ages. This was all within the rules, by the way. I don't know if it's come across. I'm a stickler for those. But we went to the bar and then it was like, I sort of got battered because it was like, I've not seen anyone for ages. And we were all sort of quizzing each other on general knowledge quizzes. There was one bit where I was being quizzed on, someone had obviously Googled general knowledge quiz and then was asking all these questions and I was getting all of them right. And the reason I was getting all of them right is because on the plane I had read the same quiz. So it was very, I didn't reveal that. So everyone was just like intimidated and thought, well, we're never going to beat this guy. He knows everything. Such as, what type of farm did Taylor Swift grow up on? Christmas tree farm, correct. Oh. But when I got that, they were all like, I can't believe you know that. And I was like, well, I read it about an hour earlier.
Okay.
Anyway, got battered, forgetting call time to film Celeb Mastermind was 9 a.m. So I get up, it's 9 a.m. I'm obviously extremely hungover. And we're doing this recording. I had this story about being asked to go and speak at my school that was in a stand-up show I was doing at the time. And I could easily turn it into a sort of light anecdote that had a little one-liner at the end or whatever. So he was going to ask me about that. You do a lot of gigs. Well, what's the weirdest place you've ever been asked? Just like that sort of thing. And then I just tell that little story, get a little laugh, onto the gen, Noel. What they then said is I was on with an MP, a former MP. They said, oh, we're going to ask you about the difference between politics and comedy instead. And I was like, well, that's quite easy. I just say, oh, well, yeah, as a comedian, if you say something dodgy and haven't got news for you, you're cancelled. As a politician, you're prime minister or whatever, some crap like that. But, you know, it would work. And that's my career. Some crap like that, it'll work. Then I sit in the chair and instead of asking me that, John Humphreys goes, so can you say anything anymore? Has it all gone a bit woke? And then I said, this is what I actually said in reply, John, it's 9 a.m. And then they said, cut there, obviously. Rhys, it's 6 p.m, remember? It's going out at 6 p.m, so you can't say that. And I was like, what I'm getting at is, I'm too hungover to answer this question. And then they just pick it up and he asks it again. And then I had to answer. I did the most fence city answer in the world because I couldn't even think straight. I was so hungover. And I'm really just thinking, I'm about to humiliate myself on general knowledge. But also, this was at a time where woke was still only really used by Childish Gambino. So when John Humphrey said it, I think my reaction was, I never thought I'd hear the day that you said the word woke. Now, that's exactly who I'd expect to say it, demographic-wise. And so I sort of said something crap, and
Did you say, okay, boomer?
That wasn't out yet. I wish I had. I wish I'd coined that. I think I just said something like, well, you can say what you want, but also don't be horrible. All right. Something that means nothing. And he looked at me like, you are a spineless little worm. And I am. So that's fine. But yeah, that was when it was like, oh, that's what all questions are going to be from now on in comedy. And that was years ago. And that is even more so the case now. But you've gone with a different angle of, are you comfortable if I say something nice to you and then watching me have a full mental collapse for 5 minutes?
Are you comfortable if I say something nice to you? No, you're not, are you?
Like I say, you have to say something nice about me to someone else. But I actually don't, it's weird that I don't have an issue. I think people have, especially in this country, have such an issue with any kind of perceived cockiness or arrogance.
Yes.
I always find it with people do it with sports stars and rappers. And I'm like, why would I want a rapper to be humble? You're a rapper. The whole genre is about bragging, really, and saying how great you are and how rich you are and stuff. Not necessarily, that diminishes the genre. But I mean, I want a rapper to be saying I'm the best. I want a sports star to say, well, the reason I scored all those goals is because I'm the best who ever lived. Because it's fun. It's much more fun. I don't want a comedian to do it, to be fair. And it's very hard to laugh at someone who has said that.
Well, I think you're right, because I think the reason some comedians struggle with praise is because it rests on sincerity. And I think the problem with sincerity is it's not always funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's nice, but it's not funny.
Yeah.
There's no comedy to be honed from it.
I also think there's an element of, I'm expecting a twist. So if someone says something nice to me, I'm like, all right, yeah, you've done your little fake earnest thing.
Yeah.
When are you going to break the tension by saying, only joking, I actually hate you? You know what I mean? So it's like, I think it's quite a guarded...
That's all your little Mock the Week pals, though. They've made you very scared.
Oh, it's small boy syndrome from back in the day. It's like, there's something coming here that's going to humiliate me in some way. So compliments, I always think, are a little fake, just like misleading garden path. That's not true. I mean, a compliment on work is absolutely fine, like I say.
I'm glad we have the boundaries.
Yeah.
Will you tell me about your partner? Because you've been with her for a long time now.
Sure.
And I love that for you.
Oh, yeah?
I think it shows you in a very good light. What are the benefits, do you think, of having had a partner in your life for a long time rather than being out on the hunt now?
I don't know that I... Even though there are some, I don't know that I really care about the career benefits. It's more... Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not... To me, that relationship isn't about my job.
Yeah.
It's more like the benefits are you have a connection with someone over 10 years and so you foster all of that sort of stuff and it's a human relationship. Now, this is an earnest answer, isn't it?
I love it.
So it's more like, no, the good things about it are all the good things about a long-term relationship. It's not... And it's like who she is. What I like about the relationship is what she sort of offers us who she is rather than in relation to my job.
Where did you meet your partner?
On Twitter. I don't wish to discuss that.
Okay.
No, we can discuss it. I'm joking. It's fucking shit. I saw her signature and I knew that she was the one for me. I think those stories are fake. One day I will say, oh, I just saw her signature. But she, I had a big Twitter account and she took her chances tweeting it.
Hang on.
No, I'm joking.
Wow. So you told me a story earlier that your dad said he fell in love with your mum after seeing some written work, and you've just told me you met your partner on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a bit of a theme
here parallel.
With the men in your family.
It was just after an Edinburgh festival in which I'd had my phone stolen from backstage, so I didn't have a phone. So when it got to the point where she was like, oh, should we exchange numbers? I had to say, I don't have a phone. And then she was like, oh, this guy's not interested. This guy's a prick. But I actually didn't have a phone.
And she
still doesn't believe that. 10 years on, she's like, nah, it's a load of bollocks. You were going out with
someone
else.
How long did it take you to ask her out?
Well, she asked me out, actually, and I said no.
Why?
Because at the time, I was still half seeing someone else and I wanted to stop that first.
Okay.
Even though it was in no exclusive and I had no obligation to do so because, great guy.
You're coming out of this well, actually. I do like this.
yeah, but it doesn't count if you keep saying how well you're coming out of it.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't count if you as being a great guy if you keep saying great guy. But
and you don't like praise.
That's what happened. And then I ended that, and then I was like, asked her out again, and then she was a bit like, But, you know, everyone's got to play it cool, get some power back, haven't they?
Oh, I love that. I think she was probably very nice, though. I like her. I don't know why. I like her.
You would like her.
I think I really would.
She's great. She's very funny. She doesn't take any shit. Calls me a prick all the time.
Does she?
Yeah.
Is that her nickname?
She doesn't. Yeah.
Does she call you Reese?
That's the pet name. Reese?
Yeah.
No, but at school. Okay, here's something that didn't help with the smallness at school.
Go on.
A geography teacher once called me. I was like, had my hand up to answer something, and she said, yes, Reese, baby. That wasn't very helpful. Reese, baby stuck for a bit.
Reese, baby. Before we go, I want to bring us up to date with your current work, because I've just been listening. Should we sit down, Reese, baby?
Yeah, why not?
Let's sit here. I've just listened to a brilliant podcast that you've made. You've written a show called...
Yes, Dial F and Football.
It's a class act, this podcast. It's a league above most things. Do you want to describe what it is, basically?
Well, I think what you're getting at is it's a scripted podcast. So it's a sitcom, effectively. Basically, it's set behind the scenes of a sport radio station called Total Sport.
What I loved is there is a tendency, sometimes with that stuff you think, it's often a bit big. but it was so believable. And I've read that apparently people had listened to it. A lot of people thought, when they were listening to the podcast, I think in one review I read this, people thought it was genuine.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people who we spoke to, so like Max Rushton, for example, who obviously does this job still.
Right.
We spoke to him and afterwards to chat to him on Football Weekly. And he was like, found it very funny but very traumatic to listen to, because it was just like, he was like, because you hear the producer in the host's ears. So Lolly Adefope and Fergus Craig play the host of this show, the Des and Lisa show. Lolly, it used to be the Des and Pete show. They're both sort of like playing men in their 60s or whatever. What's the phrase people use? Old male and stale? Pale male and stale? It was a bit that, as often some of these talk radio stations are. Lolly is a character who's been brought in as a young black woman to basically like rejuvenate and modernise the station, but still to host it with Des. Yeah. So only Pete's been sacked and then Lolly comes in. Obviously the jeopardy there is the listenership is a certain type of person as well. So do they accept this? How does she feel having to prove herself? Does she have to prove herself? All of this sort of stuff is at play, but really underneath, just like a very funny show where lots of people phone in and say mad shit like they do on these shows. And in the ear, you can hear producers saying like, oh my God, move on. And all sorts of stuff. Or just saying like, oh, give it a bit more in this one. And so there's all sorts of things. Like Tom Rosenthal plays like an ex-footballer character. It's so funny. But he plays a character that, I think originally we were going for like, let's have a Jamie O'Hara type character. But then it just like Tom just developed it into something that was completely its own thing. It's not a parody of anyone, because he's just kind of weirdly lovable. So it's obviously extremely fun to write.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that was very fun to watch sort of come to life when someone as talented as Tom comes in and just goes, yeah, I know what this is. But also it's so easy to get cameos on a phone-in show, because you literally just offer them. You just go, can you just call us for 10 minutes and say these words?
And I love Lolly Adefope as well, but I think she's so brilliant in that, because and I think you capture that in the writing as well, is just, it's very subtle a lot of the time, the way that women are treated on those shows. And I mean, I know, because if you know a tiny bit about sport, you know, it's often, oh, let's get that woman who knows a bit about it.
Sure, yeah. She basically, because of the way she's treated, and because the producer in her ear feels she has to try too hard to prove herself, and then gets a bit lost in that. And then it like leads to quite a real moment where she just ties someone up in their own logic, but not then trying too hard. She's just reacting.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I guess it's the point of everything. It's like, oh, if you're just actually authentic, then this is fine, because you're not an idiot and you are there for a reason.
Yeah. Dial FM Football has had such amazing reviews. And it has, hasn't it? It's been really critically
acclaimed.
It's
had some nice press, yeah. I don't think that means any kind of listeners.
Oh, I forgot you hate praise.
No, it's nice to have the praise, but it doesn't, it doesn't mean anything. I don't believe in reviews, really.
I think that's what it comes down to. I think you've written something absolutely brilliant, and I think you should be really proud of yourself. And
thank
I want you to take that praise.
Thank you.
Reese, who has inspired you? You've mentioned Jack Whitehall. I want to know, who's the comic who you really thought, I love what they do, and they really want to make me be a comedian? Who's your comic idol?
But the thing is, that changes constantly. So I'd say the most significant one is probably Bo Burnham. But that was quite early on. There you go. There's someone. I was the earliest adopter of Bo Burnham in England. I stand by that. And then he came to Edinburgh in 2010. And before Edinburgh, I was saying to everyone, oh my God, this guy Bo Burnham's doing Edinburgh. You've got to go and watch this. And everyone's going, what the fuck are you talking about? He's some 18-year-old. And I was like, well, so am I at the time. But I was like, no, trust me, this guy is incredible. By the end of that Edinburgh, he'd like won a massive award.
Yeah.
He'd won like the panel prize. And then he did influence me for a long time after that. That sort of, I started doing like poetry stuff on stage, like as a result of seeing him do it. It's always just, my whole life is always going to be who am I copying at the moment? That's what it was. So I'd gone from Luke at school, who didn't want to be clever, to Greg at school, who was head boy and did want to be clever, to Jack Whitehall, to Bo Burnham. I don't know who it is now. Jesse Armstrong.
I think it's Reese James.
This is the most chilled I've ever seen any dog, I think.
Do you like Raymond?
Yeah, I do, but I do know what you mean. He looks like a puppet, don't you think?
Does he make you want to get a dog?
You know, in don't make me answer questions you don't want to hear the answer to.
I don't mind these. No, right. Would you not want to get a dog?
I'm loyal. I've got a cat.
What's your cat called again?
Tabitha Lightsource. Because she was named by name drop Bob Mortimer.
What?
Bob Mortimer sells cat names on Twitter as a joke, and they'd be called things like John Twat and stuff like that. So then I am lucky enough to have Bob Mortimer's email address. And so I emailed him once with a picture saying, I'm adopting this cat tomorrow. Have you got a name? I'll happily pay the... He charges £8 per annum, I think. He didn't ask for the money. I said, I'm happy to pay that to a charity. And then he just replied saying, looks like a Tabitha Lightsource to me. So that's... She's called Tab. She would hate a dog. She would hate a dog to be around.
I understand. We really like you, Reese.
The image that I'm getting right now, both of you trying to look extremely cute, all huddled up together.
Thank you for coming on our
Thank
podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Will you say goodbye to Raymond?
Raymond, I wish you the best.
When you say, Raymond, I wish you the best, you sound like you're breaking up with
him. Raymond, I wish you the best, but it's not worked out, I'm afraid. You'll never see me again. I'll come by and get my stuff tomorrow.
Oh, poor Raymond.
He's fine. He looks happy.
Bye, Reese. Bye.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of Walking the Dog. We'd love it if you subscribed, and do join us next time on Walking the Dog, wherever you get your podcasts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.